The Hobbit, Part 1, by J.R.R. Tolkien.
In a hole in the ground there lived a hobbit. Not a nasty, dirty, wet hole filled with ends of worms and an oozy smell, nor yet a dry, bare, sandy hole with nothing in it to sit down on or to eat. It was a hobbit hole, and that means comfort. It had a perfectly round door like a porthole, painted green, with a shiny yellow brass knob in the exact middle. The door opened onto a tube-shaped hall like a tunnel, a very comfortable tunnel without smoke, with paneled walls and floors tiled and carpeted, provided with polished chairs and lots of pegs for hats and coats. The hobbit was fond of visitors. He was a very well-to-do hobbit, and his name was Baggins, Bilbo Baggins. He was about 50 years old or so, and had lived in the beautiful hobbit hole in what was called Bag End for many years, and had, in fact, apparently settled down immovably. By some curious chance, one morning long ago in the quiet of the world, when there was less noise and more green, and the hobbits were still numerous and prosperous, Bilbo Baggins was standing at his door after breakfast, smoking an enormous, long wooden pipe that reached nearly down to his woolly toes, when an old man with a staff came by. He had a tall, pointed blue hat, a long gray cloak, a silver scarf over which a white beard hung down below his waist, and immense black boots.
Good morning.
What do you mean? Do you wish me a good morning, or that it is a good morning, whether I want it or not, or that you feel good this morning, or that it is a morning to be good on?
All of them at once, and a very fine morning for a pipe of tobacco out of doors into the bargain. If you have a pipe about you, sit down and have a fill of my pipeweed. There's no hurry. We have all day before us to blow gray rings of smoke.
Very pretty. But I've no time to blow smoke rings this morning. I'm looking for someone to share in an adventure that I'm arranging, and it's very difficult to find anyone.
I should think so in these parts. We're plain, quiet folk and have no use for adventures. Nasty, disturbing, uncomfortable things make you late for dinner. I can't think what anybody sees in them. We don't want any adventures here, thank you. Good morning.
What a lot of things you use good morning for. Now you mean that you want to get rid of me, and that it won't be a good morning till I move off.
Not at all, not at all, my dear sir. Let me see. I don't think I know your name.
I know your name, Mr. Bilbo Baggins, and you know my name, though you don't remember that I belong to it. I am Gandalf. To think that I should have lived to be good morninged by Belladonna Took's son, as if I was selling buttons at the door.
Gandalf. Gandalf, good gracious me, not the wandering wizard that used to make such particularly excellent fireworks. I remember those. Not the Gandalf who was responsible for so many quiet lads and lasses going off on mad adventures, anything from climbing trees to visiting elves or sailing ships to other shores. Bless me, I beg your pardon, but I had no idea you were still in business.
Now, where else should I be? Well, I'm pleased to find you remembering something about me. Indeed, for your old grandfather Took's sake and for the sake of poor Belladonna, your mother, I'll give you what you asked for.
I beg your pardon. I haven't asked for anything.
Yes, you have. Twice now. My pardon. I give it to you. In fact, I'll go so far as to send you on this adventure. Very amusing for me, very good for you, and profitable too, very likely, if you ever get over it.
Sorry, I don't want any adventures, thank you. Not today. Good morning. But please come to tea any time you like. Why not tomorrow? Come tomorrow. Goodbye. Oh, what on earth did I ask him to tea for? I think I'd better have a cake or two and something to drink. Ooh, what a fright!
Gandalf, in the meantime, was still standing outside the door and laughing long but quietly. After a while, he stepped up, and with the spike of his staff scratched a queer sign on the hobbit's beautiful green front door. Then he strode away. The next day, Bilbo had almost forgotten about Gandalf. He didn't remember things very well unless he put them down on his engagement tablet like this, Gandalf Tea, Wednesday. He had been too flustered yesterday to do anything of the kind. Just before tea time, there came a tremendous ring on the front doorbell. And then he remembered. He rushed to put on the kettle and put out another cup and saucer and an extra cake or two and ran to the door.
Oh, I'm sorry to keep you waiting.
Dwalin, at your service.
Oh, Bilbo Baggins at yours. I'm just about to take tea. Pray come and have some with me.
Thank you.
Oh, excuse me. So you have got here at last.
I see they have begun to arrive already. That's Dwalin's green hood hanging up. Balin at your service.
Oh, thank you. Come along in and have some tea.
A little beer would suit me better if it's all the same to you, my good sir. But I don't mind some cake. Seed cake, if you have any.
Lots. Oh, my. What did he mean, they have begun to arrive? Oh.
That's Gandalf for certain this time. Here's the beer and cake. Excuse me while I answer the door.
What can I do for you, my dwarves?
Keely, at your service.
And Feely?
At yours and your family's.
Dwalin and Balin here already, I see. Let's join the throng.
Throng? I don't like the sound of that. I really must sit down for a minute and collect my wits and have a drink. Somebody at the door.
Some four, I should say, by the sound. Besides, we saw them coming along behind us in the distance, didn't we?
Gracious me. Oh, what's happening here? Well, it's not four dwarves, after all. It's five.
At your service.
Sorry.
Mori.
Ari.
Owen.
And Lorne.
This is the most awkward Wednesday I can remember.
Now what? Somebody's banging with a stick.
Carefully. It's not like you, Bilbo, to keep friends waiting on the mat and then open the door like a popgun. Let me introduce Biffa, Bofa, Bomba, and especially Thorin.
At your service.
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. I didn't mean to open so abruptly.
Now, don't mention it. Now, I see 13 hoods hanging in your hallway, Bilbo. We're all here, quite a merry gathering. I hope there's something left for the latecomers to eat and drink.
There's some tea.
What's that, tea? Oh, no, thank you. A little red wine, I think, for me.
And for me.
And raspberry jam and apple tart.
And mince pies and cheese.
And pork pie and standard.
And more cake.
And ale.
And coffee, if you don't mind.
Put on a few eggs, there's a good fellow, and just bring out the cold chicken and pickle.
Seems to know as much about the inside of my larder as I do myself. Confusticate and bother those dwarves. Why don't they come and lend a hand?
Gandalf sat at the head of the party with the 13 dwarves all round, and Bilbo sat on a stool at the fireside, nibbling at a biscuit. His appetite was quite taken away, trying to look as if this was all perfectly ordinary and not in the least an adventure. The dwarves ate and ate and talked and talked, and time got on.
I suppose you'll all stay to supper?
Of course. And after. We shan't get through the business till later, and we must have some music first. Bring out the instruments.
Excuse me, I left mine on the porch.
Well, just bring mine in with you. That's it. All right, are you ready? Good job. I'll listen when it comes.
Far over the misty mountains.
of sword. On silver necklaces they strung the flowering stars, on crowns they hung the dragon fire in twisted wire. They missed the light of moon and sun. The bells were ringing in the gale, and men looked up with faces pale. The dragon's eye, more fierce than fire, they flowed their towers and houses frail.
The mountain smoke beneath the moon, the dwarves they heard the tramp of doom. They fled their hall to dying fall beneath his feet, beneath the moon.
As they sang, the hobbit felt the love of beautiful things made by hands and by cunning and by magic moving through him, a fierce and jealous love, the desire of the hearts of dwarves. Then something tookish woke up inside him, and he wished to go and see the great mountains and explore the caves and wear a sword instead of a walking stick. He looked out of the window. The stars were out in a dark sky above the trees. He thought of the jewels of the dwarves shining in dark caverns. Suddenly, in the wood beyond the water, a flame leapt up, probably somebody lighting a wood fire. And he thought of plundering dragons settling on his quiet hill and kindling at all the flames. He shuddered. And very quickly he was playing Mr. Baggins of Bag End again. He got up trembling. He had less than half a mind to fetch a lamp, and more than half a mind to pretend to and go and hide behind the beer barrels in the cellar and not come out again until all the dwarves had gone away. Suddenly he found that the music and singing had stopped, and they were all looking at him with eyes shining in the dark.
Where are you going?
What about a little light?
We like the dark.
Dark for dark business.
There are many hours before dawn.
Oh, of course.
Now let Thorin speak.
Gandalf, dwarves, and Mr. Baggins, we are met together in the house of our friend and fellow conspirator, this most excellent and audacious hobbit. May the hair on his toes never fall out. All praise to his wine and ale.
What's this fellow conspirator? Audacious hobbit.
We are met to discuss our plans, our ways, means, policy, and devices. We shall soon, before the break of day, start on our long journey. A journey from which some of us, or perhaps all of us, may never return. It is a solemn moment. Our object is, I take it, well known to us all.
I believe he's fainted.
Strike a light, somebody.
Excitable little fellow, gets funny queer fits. But he's one of the best. One of the best, as fierce as a dragon in a pinch.
Will he do you think?
Oh, of course, of course. Why, his ancestor, Bull Roarer, charged the ranks of the goblins of Mount Graham in the Battle of the Green Fields and knocked their King Goldfimble's head clean off with a wooden club. It sailed 100 yards through the air and went down a rabbit hole. And in this way, the battle was won, and the game of golf invented at the same moment.
Well, one shriek like that in a moment of excitement would be enough to wake the dragon and all his relatives and kill the lot of us. As soon as I clapped eyes on the little fellow bobbing and puffing on the mat, I had my doubts. He looks more like a grocer than a burglar.
I think he's coming, too.
Burglar?
That's right. Let's have no more argument. I've chosen Mr. Baggins, and that ought to be enough for all of you. You asked me to find the 14th man for your expedition, and I chose Mr. Baggins. You can stop at 13 if you like and have all the bad luck, or go back to digging coal. If I say he's a burglar he is, or will be when the time comes. You can say expert treasure hunter instead of burglar, if you like.
I like that.
Yes, there's a lot more in him than you guess, and a deal more than he has any idea of himself. You may, possibly, all live to thank me yet. Now, Bilbo, fetch the lamp, and let's have a little light on this map. This was made by Thror, your grandfather, Thorin. It's a plan of the mountain.
I don't see that this will help us much. I remember the mountain well enough and the lands about it. And I know where Mirkwood is, and the withered heath, where the great dragons breed.
There is a dragon marked in red on the mountain. But it'll be easy enough to find him without that, if ever we arrive there.
There's one point that you haven't noticed, and that's the secret entrance.
Oh. It may have been secret once, but how do we know that it's secret any longer? Old Smaug has lived there long enough now to find out anything there is to know about those caves.
He may, but he can't have used it for years and years.
Why?
Because it's too small. 5 feet high, the door, and 3 may walk abreast, say the runes on the map. But Smaug couldn't creep into a hole that size, not even when he was a young dragon.
That's true.
Certainly not after devouring so many of the dwarves and men of Dale.
It seems a great big hole to me. How could such a large door be kept secret from everybody outside apart from the dragon?
Oh, in lots of ways. From what it says on the map, I should guess there's a closed door which has been made to look exactly like the side of the mountain. That's the usual dwarves' method. I think that's right, isn't it?
Yeah. Quite right.
Yes. Well, also, I forgot to mention that with the map went a key.
Huh?
Yes, a small, curious key.
Oh.
Let me see. Here it is.
Oh.
Now keep it safe, Thorin.
Indeed I will. Well, now things begin to look more hopeful. Supposing our burglar expert gives us some ideas or suggestions.
First, I should like to know a bit more about things. I mean, about the gold and the dragon and all that, and how it got there, and who it belongs to, and so on and further.
Well, bless me, haven't you got a map? And didn't you hear our song? And haven't we been talking about all this for hours?
All the same, I should like everything plain and clear. I should like to know about risks, out-of-pocket expenses, time required and remuneration, and so forth.
Oh, he wants to know what he's going to get out of it, and if he'll come back alive.
Very well. Long ago, in my grandfather Thror's time, our family was driven out of the far north and came back with all their wealth and their tools to this mountain on the map. They mined, and they tunneled, and they made huge halls and great workshops. And in addition, I believe they found a good deal of gold and a great many jewels, too.
Yeah, I remember that.
Anyway, they grew immensely rich and famous, and my grandfather was king under the mountain again. His halls became full of armor and jewels and carvings and cups, and the toy market of Dale that was built nearby by mortal men was the wonder of the North.
Remember the toy market?
Now, undoubtedly that, oh yes, that was what brought the dragon. Dragons steal gold and jewels, you know, from men and elves and dwarves, wherever they can find them. And they guard their plunder as long as they live, which is practically forever unless they're killed, and never enjoy a brass ring of it. Well, there was a most specially greedy, strong, and wicked worm called Small. One day, he flew up into the air and came south. The first we heard of it was a noise like a hurricane coming from the north, and the pine trees on the mountain creaking and cracking in the wind. Well, from a good way off, we saw the dragon settle on our mountain in a spout of flame. Then he came down the slopes, and when he reached the woods, they all went up in fire. By that time, all the bells were ringing in Dale, and the warriors were arming, and the dwarves rushed out of their great gate. But there was the dragon waiting for them. Not one escaped that way. The river rushed up in steam, and a fog fell on Dale. And in the fog, the dragon came on them and destroyed most of the warriors. Then he went back and crept in through the front gate and routed out all the halls and lanes, tunnels, alleys, cellars, mansions, and passages. After that, there were no dwarves left alive inside. And he took all their wealth for himself.
That was a terrible time.
Probably, for that is the dragon's way. He's piled it all up in a great heap far inside and sleeps on it for a bed. Well, after that we went away. But we've never forgotten our stolen treasure. And we still mean to get it back and to bring our curses home to Smaug. Now we have the map and key to the secret door. We shall succeed in our burden.
Yes!
Gandalf, I should like to know how you got hold of the map.
I didn't get hold of it. I was given it. Your grandfather, Thror, was killed, you remember, in the mines of Moria by Azog the Goblin.
Oh. Curse his name, yes.
Yes, and Thrain, your father, went away on the 21st of April, 100 years ago, last Thursday, and has never been seen by you since.
True, true.
Well, your father gave me this to give to you. Wow,
I don't understand.
Well, I found your father a prisoner in the dungeons of the necromancer.
Whatever were you doing there?
Never you mind. I was finding things out as usual. I tried to save your father, but it was too late. He was witless and wandering, and had forgotten almost everything except the map and the key.
We have long ago paid the goblins of Moria. We must now give a thought to the necromancer.
Don't be absurd. He's an enemy quite beyond the powers of all the dwarves put together. The dragon and the mountain are more than big enough tasks for you.
Hear, hear!
Hear what?
Well, I should say that you ought to go to the east and have a look around. After all, there is the side door, and the dragons must sleep sometimes, I suppose. If you sit on the doorstep long enough, I dare say you'll think of something. Now, what about bed and an early start and all that? I'll give you a good breakfast before you go.
Before we go, I suppose you mean, aren't you the burglar? And isn't sitting on the doorstep your job? And not to speak of getting inside the door. But I agree about bed and breakfast. I like 6 eggs with my ham when starting on a journey. Fried, not poached. And mind you don't break them. I won't eat a broken egg.
Oranges,
I'd like some porridge in the morning and a little
oranges,
milk.
After all the others had ordered their breakfasts without so much as a please, they all got up. The hobbit had to find room for them all, and filled all his spare rooms and made beds on chairs and sofas before he got them all stowed and went to his own little bed, very tired, and not altogether happy. As he lay in bed, he could hear Thorin still humming to himself in the best bedroom next to him.
Far over the misty mountains old, to dungeons deep and caverns old, we must away ere break of day to find our long forgotten gold.
Bilbo went to sleep with that in his ears, and it gave him very uncomfortable dreams. It was long after the break of day when Bilbo woke up. There was nobody about, but all the signs of a large and hurried breakfast. There was a fearful mess in the room and piles of unwashed crocks in the kitchen. Nearly every pot and pan he possessed seemed to have been used. Still, he could not help feeling just a trifle disappointed.
Oh, don't be a fool, Bilbo Baggins, thinking of dragons and all that outlandish nonsense at your age. You should be delighted that they have all gone without you. I'll just sit down to a nice little breakfast.
My dear fellow, whenever are you going to come? What about an early start? It's 10:30. They left you the message because they couldn't wait.
What message?
Great elephants. You're not at all yourself this morning. You've never dusted the mantelpiece.
What's that got to do with it? I've enough to do with washing up for 14.
If you dusted the mantelpiece, you'd have found this note just under the clock.
Huh? Thorin and Company to Burglar Bilbo, greetings.
Yes.
For your hospitality, our sincerest thanks, and for your offer of professional assistance, our grateful acceptance. Terms, cash on delivery, up to and not exceeding 1/14 of total profits, if any. All traveling expenses guaranteed in any event. Funeral expenses to be defrayed by us or our representatives, if occasion arises and the matter is not otherwise arranged for. Thinking it unnecessary to disturb you, we have proceeded in advance to make preparations and shall await your respected person at the Green Dragon Inn Bywater at 11 a.m. sharp. Trusting that you will be punctual, we have the honor to remain yours deeply, Thorin and Company.
Yes, and that leaves you, let me see, just 10 minutes. You'll have to run.
But...
No time for it.
But...
No time for that either. Off you go.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
To the end of his days, Bilbo could never remember how he found himself outside without a hat, walking stick, or any money, or anything that he usually took when he went out. Running as fast as his furry feet could carry him down the lane, past the great mill, across the water, and then on for a whole mile or more, Bilbo got to Bywater just on the stroke of 11. There were the dwarves on ponies, and each pony was slung about with all kinds of baggage, packages, parcels, and paraphernalia. There was a very small pony, apparently for Bilbo.
Bravo! Here comes Baggins!
Up you get and off we go!
I'm awfully sorry. I've come without my hat, and I've left my pocket handkerchief behind, and I haven't got any money. I didn't get your note until after 10:45, to be precise.
Don't be precise, and don't worry. You'll manage without pocket handkerchiefs and a good many other things before you get to the journey's end.
As for a hat, I've got a spare hood and cloak in my luggage.
Then off we go.
That's how they all came to start, jogging off from the inn one fine morning just before May on laden ponies. They hadn't been riding very long when up came Gandalf, very splendid on a white horse. He had brought a lot of pocket handkerchiefs and Bilbo's pipe and tobacco. So after that, the party went along very merrily, And they told stories or sang songs as they rode forward all day, except, of course, when they stopped for meals. At first, they passed through Hobbit lands, a wild, respectable country inhabited by decent folk with good roads, an inn or two, and now and then a dwarf or a farmer ambling by on business. Then they came to lands where people spoke strangely and sang songs Bilbo had never heard before. At last, they came to the Lone Lands, where there were no people left, no inns, and the roads grew steadily worse. Not far ahead were dreary hills rising higher and higher, dark with trees. On some of them were old castles with an evil look, as if they had been built by wicked people. Everything seemed gloomy, for the weather had taken a nasty turn. Still, the dwarves jogged on, and then it began to rain, and the wind got up, and the willows along the river bank bent and sighed. Somewhere behind the gray clouds, the sun must have gone down, for it began to get dark.
I'm sure the rains got into the dry clothes and into the food bags. Bother burgling and everything to do with it. I wish I was at home in my nice hole by the fire with the kettle just beginning to sing.
Well, let's stop for supper and see if we can find a dry patch to sleep on.
Hey, where's Gandalf?
Oh, he isn't here.
Just when a wizard would have been most useful.
Well, we'll have to do without him. Owen and Glowin, see if you can get a fire started.
All right.
Look, there's a light over there.
No, I don't think so.
Yes, there it is, through the trees.
These parts are none too well known, and the less inquisitive you are as you go along, the less trouble you're likely to find.
After all, there are 14 of us.
Where has Gandalf got to?
Listen, haven't we got a burglar with us?
Yes.
Well, it's his turn.
Yes.
Now you must go and find out about that light.
And what it's for.
And if all is perfectly safe and canny.
Now scuttle off and come back quick if all's well. If not, come back if you can. Mm-hmm. If you can't, hoot twice like a barn owl and once like a screech owl, and we'll do what we can.
Well, I'm not cut out for this sort
of thing. Off Bilbo had to go before he could explain that he couldn't hoot even once like any kind of owl any more than fly like a bat. But at any rate, hobbits can move quietly in woods, absolutely quietly. They take a pride in it. So, naturally, he got right up to the fire, for fire it was, without disturbing anyone. Three very large persons were sitting round a very large fire of beech logs. They were toasting mutton on long spits of wood and licking the gravy off their fingers. Even Bilbo, in spite of his sheltered life, could see that they were trolls. Obviously, trolls.
That's good. Mutton yesterday, mutton today, and skunks if it don't look like mutton again tomorrow.
Yeah, never a blinkin' bit of man flesh if we had for long enough. What the hell William was a-thinking of to bring us in these parts at all beats me.
Now shut your mouth. You can't expect folk to stop here forever just to be et by you and Bert. You've et a village and a half between years since we come down from the mountains. Time's been up our way when you'd have said, oh, thank you, Bill, for a nice bit of fat valley mutton like what this is.
What should I do? I can't go back to Thorin and Company empty-handed. Maybe I'll just slip the purse out of William's pocket. Ha, it's a beginning.
Hey, what's this? Oh, blimey, Bert, look what I've carved.
What is it?
Blimey if I knows. What are yez?
Bilbo Baggins, a hobbit.
A burr-a-hobbit?
What's a bur hobbit got to do with my pocket, anyways, huh?
Can you cook him?
You can try. He wouldn't make more than a mouthful, not when he was skinned and boned.
Perhaps they're more like him roundabout, and we might make a pie.
Are there any more of your sort sneaking in these here woods, you nasty little rabbit?
Yes, lots. None at all.
What do you mean, lots and none at all?
Just what I say. And please don't cook me, kind sirs. I'm a good cook myself and cook better than I cook, if you see what I mean.
Ah, poor little blighter. Let him go.
Not till he says what he means by lots and none at all. Hold his toes in the fire till he talks.
I won't have it. I caught him anyways.
You're a fat fool, Williams, I've said afore this evening.
And you're a low.
I won't take that from you, Bill Huggins.
No, you no, don't.
Take what I give you.
No, don't fight now, you two. Keep on fighting.
There was a gorgeous row, and soon the trolls were locked in one another's arms and rolling nearly into the fire, kicking and thumping, while Tom whacked at them both with a branch to bring them to their senses, and that, of course, only made them madder than ever. Right in the middle of the fight, up came Balin. No sooner did Tom see him come into the light than he slapped a sack over his head.
Oh, there's more to come yet, boys, or I mighty mistook. Lots and none at all it is. No brobbits, but lots of these here dwarves. That's about the shape of it.
I reckon you're right, and we'd best get out of the light.
Yeah, I simply detest the sight of dwarves. And corpse.
With sacks in their hands, they waited in the shadows. As each dwarf came up and looked at the fire, pop, went a nasty, smelly sack over his head and he was down. After some fighting, for dwarves fight like mad when they're cornered, all of them were neatly tied up in sacks, with three angry trolls sitting by them arguing whether they should roast the dwarves slowly, or mince them fine and boil them, or just sit on them one by one and squash them into jelly. Bilbo was hiding in a bush where he had escaped during the struggle. It was just then that Gandalf came back. No one saw him, but the wizard saw them. Knowing how trolls like to argue, Gandalf decided to keep them bickering and fighting by imitating the voices of the trolls. They were about to roast the dwarves now and eat them later, which was Bert's idea, and after a lot of argument, they had all agreed to it.
No good roasting them now. It'll take all night.
Don't start the argument all over again, Bill, or it'll take all night.
Who's arguing?
You are.
You're a liar.
Forget roasting them then, and let's boil them.
Oh, now you're making sense.
No good boiling them. We ain't got the water, and it's a long way to the well and all.
Shut up, Tom, or I'd never get done.
And you can fetch the water yourself if you say any more.
Shut up yourself. Who's arguing but you, I'd like to know?
You're a booby.
Booby yourself. Now let's sit on the sacks one by one and squash them and boil them later. Who shall we sit on first?
Better sit on the last fellow first.
Which is he?
The one with the yellow stocking.
Nonsense, the one with the grey stocking.
I made sure it was yellow.
Yellow it was.
Then what did you say grey for?
I never did. Tom said it.
I did not, it was you.
2-1, so shut your mouth.
Who are you talking to?
Dawn take you all and be stoned to you.
Just at that moment, the light came over the hill, and there was a mighty twitter in the branches. William never spoke, for he stood turned to stone as he stooped. And Bert and Tom were stuck like rocks as they looked at him. And there they stand to this day, all alone, unless the birds perch on them. For trolls, as you probably know, must be underground before dawn, or they go back to the stuff of the mountains they are made of, and never move again. Just then Gandalf stepped from behind a tree and helped Bilbo to climb down out of a thorn bush. It was the wizard's voice that had kept the trolls bickering and quarreling until the light came and made an end of them. The next thing was to untie the sacks and let out the dwarves.
How did you get caught in the first place, burglar Baggins?
Huh? Well, I was trying to lift the wallet out of William's pocket and...
Silly time to go practicing pinching and pocket picking, when what we wanted was fire and food.
And that's just what you wouldn't have got of those fellows without a struggle in any case. Well, let's not waste time. The trolls must have a cave or a hole dug somewhere near to hide from the sun.
I found it! There it is! Over here! I found it!
Ah, very good, Killy. Now, if we can find a way to open the big door of stone...
Would this key be any good? I found it on the ground where the trolls had their fight.
Why on earth didn't you mention it before? Give it to me!
What a mess! Bones all over the floor!
Phew! What a nasty smell.
I'm afraid it's the bones of their victims. And what do we have here?
Swords. Look at the beautiful scabbards and jeweled hilts.
They weren't made by any troll, nor by any smith among men in these parts and days. When we can read the runes on them, we shall know more about them.
I'll keep this one, and you keep that one, Gandalf. Here, Bilbo. This is a small knife which may serve as a short sword for a hobbit.
Let's get out of this horrible smell.
Yes, leave this
Bring
place.
Out some of that food, then we'll eat and rest before going on.
Where did you go to, if I may ask?
Oh, to look ahead.
Yeah, and what brought you back in the nick of time?
Oh, looking behind.
Now, could you be more plain?
I went on to spy out our road when I met a couple of friends of mine from Rivendell, Elrond's people. They told me that three trolls had come down from the mountain and settled in the woods not far from the road. I immediately had a feeling that I was wanted back. I saw a fire in the distance and made for it, so now you know. Please be more careful next time, or we shall never get anywhere.
Thank you.
They did not sing or tell stories that day, nor the next day, nor the day after that. They camped under the stars, and their horses had more to eat than they had. A great mountain, dark and drear, lay before them. There were patches of sunlight on its brown sides, and behind its shoulders the tips of snow peaks gleamed.
Is that the mountain?
Of course not! It's only the beginning of the Misty Mountains.
We've got to get through or over or under it somehow before we can come into Wilderland beyond.
And it's a deal of a way, even from the other side of it, to the lonely mountain in the east where Smaug lies on your treasure.
Right.
Oh.
Now, we mustn't miss the road, or we'll be done for. We need food, for one thing, and rest in reasonable safety.
Where will we find that?
Oh, hidden somewhere ahead of us is the fair valley of Rivendell, where Elrond lives.
Gandalf led the way through unexpected valleys, narrow with deep sides. There were gullies they could almost leap over, but very deep with waterfalls in them. There were dark ravines that one could neither jump nor climb into. There were bogs, some of them green, pleasant places to look at, with flowers growing bright and tall. But a pony that walked there with a pack on its back would never have come out again. Bilbo's pony began to stumble over roots and stones in the gathering darkness. They came to the edge of a steep fall in the ground so suddenly that Gandalf's horse nearly slipped down the slope.
Here it is at last!
Smells like elves.
Down they went into the valley below. Bilbo never forgot the way they slithered and slipped in the dusk down the steep zigzag path into the secret valley of Rivendell. They stayed long in the good House of Elrond, 14 days at least, and they found it hard to leave. Bilbo would gladly have stopped there forever and ever, for Elrond's house was perfect, whether you liked food or sleep or work or storytelling or singing or just sitting and thinking best, or a pleasant mixture of them all. Evil things did not come into that valley. One day, just before they left on their journey, Elrond looked at the swords they had brought from the troll's cave.
These are not troll make. They are old swords. Very old swords of the High Elves of the West, my kin. They were made in Gondolin for the Goblin Wars.
Whence did the trolls get them, I wonder?
They must have come from a dragon's hoard or goblin plunder. And the trolls had plundered the plunderers.
And what do the runes say?
This sword, Gandalf, was Glamdring, the foe hammer, which the king of Gondolin once wore. This Thorin, the runes named Orcrist, the goblin cleaver. It was a famous blade. Keep it well.
I will keep this sword in honor. May it soon cleave goblins once again.
I wish that is likely to be granted soon enough in the mountains. But show me your map.
Here it is.
What is this? There are moon letters here, besides the plain runes which say 5 feet high the door, and 3 may walk abreast.
What are moon letters?
Well, moon letters are rune letters, but you cannot see them, not when you look straight at them. They can only be seen when the moon shines behind them. And what is more, with a more cunning sort, it must be a moon of the same shape and season as the day when they were written. The dwarfs invented them and wrote them with silver pens.
What do they say?
Stand by the gray stone when the thrush knocks, and the setting sun, with the last light of Durin's day, will shine upon the keyhole.
Durin? Durin? He was the father of the fathers of the eldest race of dwarves, the Longbeards, and my first ancestor. I am his heir.
Then what is Durin's day?
The first day of the dwarves' new year. It is the first day of the last moon of autumn. We still call it Durin's Day when the last moon of autumn and the sun are in the sky together.
Is there any more writing?
None to be seen by this moon.
The next morning was a midsummer's morning as fair and fresh as could be dreamed. Blue sky and never a cloud, and the sun dancing on the water. Now they rode away amid songs of farewell and good speed, with their hearts ready for more adventure, and with a knowledge of the road they must follow over the misty mountains to the land beyond. There were many paths that led up into the Misty Mountains, and many passes over them. The dwarves and the hobbit, helped by the wise advice of Elrond and the knowledge and memory of Gandalf, took the right road to the right pass. Long days after they had climbed out of the valley and left Rivendell miles behind, they were still going up and up and up. It was a hard pass, and a dangerous path, crooked and lonely and long. Far, far away in the west, where things were blue and faint, Bilbo knew there lay his own country of safe and comfortable things and his little hobbit hole.
Summer's getting on down below, and haymaking is going on, and picnics. They'll be harvesting and blackberrying before we even begin to go down the other side at this rate. Oh, it's cold up here.
One day they met a thunderstorm. More than a thunderstorm, a thunder battle. The lightning splintered on the peaks, and great crashes split the air and went rolling and tumbling into every cave and hollow. The darkness was filled with overwhelming noise and sudden light. They were camped high up in a narrow place, sheltering under a hanging rock. Across the valley, the stone giants were out, hurling rocks at one another for a game, and catching them and tossing them down into the darkness where they smashed among the trees far below, or splintered into little bits with a bang.
This won't do at all. If we don't get blown off or drowned, or struck by lightning, we'll be picked up by some giant and kicked sky high for a football.
Well, if you know of anywhere better, take us there.
Feeny and Keely have gone to search for better shelter. They should return soon.
There they are, holding on to the rocks in the wind.
We found a dry cave.
Not far around the next corner. Ponies and all could get inside.
Have you thoroughly explored it?
Yes.
It isn't all that big, and it doesn't go far back.
All right, let's go. And carefully. It's quite a fair size. Not too large and mysterious.
I'll just light my wand and look around a bit.
Put the ponies over at that end.
At least it's dry.
And out of the wind.
It seems safe enough.
What about a fire to dry our clothes?
No fires. Spread your wet things on the floor and take some dry clothes from your bundle.
Lay out the blankets and let's get some sleep.
When they were comfortable, they dropped off to sleep one by one. But somehow Bilbo could not go to sleep for a long while. And when he did sleep, he had very nasty dreams. He dreamed that a crack in the wall at the back of the cave got bigger and bigger and opened wider and wider. And then he dreamed that the floor of the cave was giving way and he was slipping, beginning to fall down, down. At that he woke up with a horrible start and found that part of his dream was true. A crack had opened at the back of the cave and was already a wide passage. He was just in time to see the last of the ponies disappearing into it. It was goblins, big goblins, ugly-looking goblins, lots of goblins, six to each dwarf at least, and two even for Bilbo. They were all grabbed and carried through the crack, all except Gandalf. When goblins came to grab him, there was a terrific flash like lightning in the cave, a smell like gunpowder, and several goblins fell dead. The crack closed with a snap. Bilbo and the dwarves were on the wrong side of it. The goblins seized Bilbo and the dwarves and hurried them along the dark passageway. The goblins began to croak, keeping time as they went.
Grip! The black! Crack!
Grip!
Grab!
Pinch!
Nab! Down, down, the goblin town you go, my lad! Clash, crash, crash, slash.
Hammer and tongs.
Knocker and gongs.
Pound, pound.
Fire and the ground.
Pow, my lad. Swish, smack, whip, crack.
Batter and beat.
Yammer.
Round and round.
Far underground.
Below, my lad.
It sounded truly terrifying. The general meaning of the song was only too plain. And now the goblins took out their whips and cracked them and whooped as they drove their captives along. Finally, they stumbled into a big cavern, lit by a great red fire in the middle and by torches along the walls. It was full of goblins, laughing, stamping, and clapping their hands. There, in the shadows on a large flat stone, sat a tremendous goblin with a huge head, and armed goblins stood round him carrying axes and bent swords.
Who are these miserable persons?
Dwarves and this! Let go of me!
We found them sheltering in our front porch.
What do you mean by it, dwarves? Up to no good? Spying on the private business of my people, I guess. Thieves, I shouldn't be surprised to learn. Murderers and friends of elves, not unlikely. Come, what have you got to say?
Thorin the dwarf, at your service. We sheltered from storm in what seemed a convenient cave and unused. Nothing was further from our thoughts than disturbing goblins in any way. Whatever.
So you say. Might I ask what you were doing up in the mountains at all? And where you were coming from? And where you were going to? In fact, I should like to know all about you. Not that it will do you much good, Thorin Oakenshield. I know too much about your folk already. But let's have the truth, or I'll prepare something particularly uncomfortable for you.
We were on a journey to visit our relatives who live on the east side of these truly hospitable mountains.
He's a liar, oh truly tremendous one.
Several of our people were struck by lightning in the cave when we invited these creatures to come below.
And they are as dead as stone.
Also, he has not explained this sword.
Murderers and elf friends, it is the sword we call Biter, which the elves call Orcrist. It has killed hundreds of goblins in its time. Take these dwarves away to dark holes full of snakes and never let them see the light again.
Slash them!
Ease them!
Right! Nice.
Suddenly, all the lights in the cabin went out, and the great fire went off, shoof, right up to the roof. Then piercing white sparks scattered among the goblins, burning holes in them. Suddenly, a sword flashed in its own light. Bilbo saw it go right through the great goblin as he stood dumbfounded in the middle of his rage. He fell dead, and the goblin soldiers fled before the sword, shrieking into the darkness.
Follow me, quick!
It was you, Gandalf.
Yes, we must hurry. The torches will soon be relit. Are we all here? Let me see. One, that's Thorin. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, 11. Where are Keely and Philly?
Here we are.
Ah, 12, 13. And here's Mr. Baggins, 14. Well, well, it might be worse, and then again it might be a good deal better. No ponies and no food and no knowing quite where we are, and hordes of angry goblins just behind. On we go.
On they went. Gandalf was quite right. They began to hear goblin noises and horrible cries far behind in the passages they had come through. Since poor Bilbo could not possibly go half as fast as the dwarves, they took it in turn to carry him on their backs.
Still, goblins go faster than dwarves, and these goblins knew the way better. They chose out their very quickest runners with the sharpest ears and eyes. These ran forward as swift as weasels in the dark, and with hardly any more noise than bats. Quite suddenly, Dory, now at the back again, carrying Bilbo, was grabbed from behind in the dark! He shouted and fell, and the hobbit rolled off his shoulders into the blackness, bumped his head on hard rock, and remembered nothing more.
You've been listening to The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, adapted for radio by Bob Lewis, and featuring Ray Reinhardt as Bilbo, Bernard Mays as Gandalf, Tom Luce as Thorin, Carl Haig as Elrond, and Gail Chug as the narrator. Also heard in the cast were Pat Franklin and Joe Hughes.